The blessing of little children is a very happy, it's a very special occasion in the church every year at this particular time. Children are a blessing from God, as the psalm says in Psalm 127. It talks about them as arrows in a quiver and how what they are to parents. And certainly parents, I think, all agree and believe that. Parents who believe in Christ's example, they want their children to be blessed by God. And this is why believing Jewish parents brought their children to Jesus to be blessed. Today is no different. We all want the best for our children as they grow up in life. But the reality is that both the parents and the children are going to run into a lot of opposition along the way. The God of this world wants to destroy our children by turning their minds away from everything that is right. And he has been very successful in this age in doing just that. There is a battle going on for your children's minds and for their beliefs as they mature and grow. And as parents, we might ask, are we helpless in this battle? Or is there something that we can do? No, we are not helpless. And yes, there is much that can be done. But today I would like to look at the principles of successful child rearing that will help us in fighting a battle that most of us already realize, and some will as time goes by here soon. Principles are usually broad in their scope, but they can be easy to remember. And that's why I simply am going to talk about some. And by the way, it's certainly not everything covered on this subject. Many, many other aspects of the subject of child rearing and parenting that I could give. But I'm simply going to try to hit some of the principles here today. Before we look at a few principles, let's first ask, what do we want to achieve? That's something that parents, especially new parents, should stop and ask. What do I want to achieve with the children I'm having? I want children, but now what do I want to achieve with them? Well, let me give you a few things I think that you probably wouldn't be in disagreement with. First of all, we should want to instill in our children the belief in God and obedience to God's commandments. Why would we want to do that? Well, in this battle, everything revolves around God and His Word that we're fighting. It really does. For example, who decides what is right and what is wrong for your child, the state or God? Who decides what is truth for your child, the God of this world or God? Who decides what is morality or what constitutes sin? It's very difficult because children growing up, they couldn't answer those questions. It's whatever seems right to them. They do not have religious training. I'm talking about majorities in this country. Obviously, there are those who do. But you can see that if you leave God out of the very early teaching to your child, they have to be taught there is a God. He is invisible. You can't see him, but he knows what you're doing. He knows your thoughts, your actions. You cannot fool him. And he's given us things that are good for us to live by and to do. And teaching the commandments, starting very simple on terms and on their level. And as they grow, continuing to increase upon that as the years go by. What if you don't? What if you don't? Well, we can look around and see what happens in our own society, where we have a society that such a huge percentage of children do not have religious training. I grew up with kids, and I played on ball teams with guys who had no religious training, and it certainly could show in how they conducted themselves. They didn't have any, talking about morality. They had no fear to be immoral. There was nothing like that whatsoever. In some cases, it didn't bother them to be dishonest, and some of them were. They had great abilities when it came to physical sports and things like that, more than I had, but they did not have the training that would have helped them to stay out of trouble, let's put it that way. In the book of Ecclesiastes, at the very end of the book, Solomon gives the conclusion to it all in chapter 12 and verse 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it is good or evil. This is something that has to be taught to children as they grow up from preschool into elementary school and continue to be given to them. Why? Because if you want to shape them, if you want to achieve or see them achieve in life, they have to have boundaries and structure that they are living by and following. One other scripture, too, to take a look at. In fact, you might, when you look at Ecclesiastes 12, meditate on what it means for your child in relation to facing life's challenges. You go back and read those two verses. What does this mean to my child in relation to what they're going to experience when they go to public school, when they become a young adult? If they don't have a foundation such as this, the conclusion of the matter, then they do whatever's right in their own eyes, right? And that's what we've seen in our society, and we see a lot of terrible things that are the result of it. Now, as I already mentioned, most parents never teach these things because they do not know them. They have never been taught them either, and that's really sad. Here, in fact, everything is being done to keep God out of the schools, the Bible out of the schools, in any way. Now, you can let other things in, but don't let God in. Don't let the Bible in. And what a shame. There was a time when, these in many schools years and years ago where some things of the Bible were taught. And it was not, there was no rebellion against it. There was no, outcry against it from either parents or from school boards or teachers or whatever. One other scripture on this point, and we'll take a look at another thing that we hope to achieve. In Psalm 112, and in verse 1, praise the Lord. Blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who delights greatly in his commandments. That's very important, and that's something we want to teach and instill, how beautiful the commandments of God are, and that he expects us to obey them and keep them. I remember my mother, not that she was that much into the Bible, but she always taught me, as I was an only child. My brother and sister had already grown and left the home, got married. But tell the truth. Always tell the truth. And that stuck in my mind because it was told to me when I was very young. And I believed it. And I'm glad I did. Because, even whether you're going to have to suffer consequences for telling the truth, you still tell the truth. You know, that used to be taught in the schools. It used to be taught in many areas of our society. I don't know that it's taught that much. I haven't been in the schools lately. But there might be something, if they did, they'd want to make sure that they don't associate it with Christianity. And kind of keep it secularized and say it. But no, when I was taught, it was because God knows. God knows the truth. And so I believed in God, and I believed that I needed to do that, not just because my mother told me to, but because God does exist, and he knows. And these are things that fundamental things that are lacking in many cases today. What else would we like to achieve before we get in and take a look at some of the principles of child rearing? Well, I think we want to see our children be happy and really enjoying life. You know, if anything makes a parent sad, it is to see a child who is sad because they are going through some serious problems in their very young life. And so many children are today going through many, many difficulties and problems and are not happy as we would like them to be. One such problem is when the family is coming apart through divorce. For our children to be happy, there must be a stable and happy home life. I mean, even in our society, they recognize that. And that is one of the things that leads to children not being able to enjoy or have the happiness and the joy that we want to see them as parents have and they want to have, though they don't fully understand it as they're young and as they're maturing. You know, if mommy and daddy are fighting, it really affects a child's emotions. It really does. And, of course, Jesus Christ does not want to see that. He doesn't want that in the church. And he said over here in John chapter 10 and in verse 10, where he said, I would wish that you have not joy, I forgot the word here. Let me just quickly turn to it. John 10:10. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have not come that they may have. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. That they may have life and have it more abundantly. What parent does not want their children to have life abundantly? We want it for ourselves, but especially we want to see it for our children. And it's saddened to all of us if we see that they're not having an abundant life. So obviously then we have to do everything we can to make it a stable situation for them if we want to see that they have that as they mature. One other thing that I would say would be what most all parents would agree they'd like to see achieved in their children. We want them to be liked by other children, successful academically, and see them develop their talents. I mean, who would say, no, I don't want that? Obviously, those are things that we would hope and we want to see as they mature and as they grow. Again, God and family will play a big role in achieving that. How is that? Well, God and family produce stability, and it gives direction in life. Now, those are some of the important things that we obviously, and you may have some other things you'd like to see that you want to achieve with your children as they are little now and as they grow. And those years are going to go by very quickly. It's amazing. I think all of us here who are a little older in life, our children are out of the home and all of that. We go to the feast, as we did up here at St. Augustine. We see families and what used to be little children. I can't believe how fast the years have gone by. They're now young adults. And it's amazing. Well, I go to camp. I can't believe some of the kids, they were little kids. In fact, I blessed a couple of those kids at camp when they were just little tykes up in North Carolina, and the blessing of little children. I hadn't seen them and their parents for a number of years, being out of the area, go to camp, and you are who? I can't believe it. I love kidding with them, too, because I tell them, you know how many times you interrupted my sermons? And it's nice always to see the parents who we haven't seen in a long time when they either bring them to camp or we see them at a feast site, especially as the years have gone by. But those years go by too quick, don't they? It's hard to believe. And they grow up. In fact, in one other one at camp this year, I couldn't believe it. I think I've told you this before. We were this girl. It wasn't until the end of camp that I found out who she was. She was in the church when we pastored in Roanoke, Virginia. She, you know, just a little tyke, you know, and she was a pretty nice little child, too, as I remember, and everything. And I didn't catch on, with girls now 16, 17, well, 17 maybe going on 18 now. Well, she was probably, what, 2 or 3 years old when we were up there at that time. And she has developed a beautiful singing voice. She sang special music on the Sabbath, and I was taking the kids. They asked me to drive one of the vans to take them up to this mountain up there where they were having the rock climbing on Friday during camp, and because they were shorthanded there, and so I could get away from what I was doing to do that. And that's how I found out who she was. And she kept talking to me as we were walking. We had to climb the mountain before we could get to the rocks for them to climb the rocks, not me. And she kept looking and talking at me like she knew me and thought that I knew her and everything. I'm sure, you know, you pick up those little things in the eyes, and, you know, she kept talking to me like we've always known each other. And finally I said, where have we, you know, you're kind of a little sheepish about it and wanting, because you know you probably should know her. And now, where was it that we last saw each other? Well, it was Roanoke, Virginia. Trinity. I can't believe it. That was her name. Trinity, is that you? And then the next day, of course, she sang at the service that we had. But those things are enjoyable. And this young girl certainly has come along and developed very, very nicely. And when I say that, because of her talents that she has been able to achieve so far, and who knows where it will yet go. She's still young, but her parents have really encouraged her because they're people, musicians, and they have that background as well. Well, anyhow, let me move along. I just digressed here a little bit because it just came to my mind some of these things, and they are interesting when you see friends, young people who you haven't seen in a long time, and then suddenly they're growing up. Well, those are some of the things I think that all of us would like to see our children achieve in life and that we would like to achieve as parents with them. Now let's look at a few principles of successful child rearing that will help us to achieve what we want to see in our children. I only have four of them that I want to give to you. I don't want to complicate everything. But as I said earlier, principles can be broad in scope but easy to remember. The first one I have is that there must be loving authority in the home. There must be loving authority in the home. Now, some do not like the word authority because they have seen it abused, and it definitely has been abused. But authority is a part of life. When your child steps outside your home, they are going to run into authority. When they go to school, when they get on that school bus, when they go into that classroom, you know, one of the most difficult things for teachers, because one of our daughter-in-laws is a teacher, and when she was at the lower grades, is handling the one or two kids who would not cooperate, who had not been taught or trained by their parents at home. The whole class has to sit there and wait while she is dealing with a disciplinary problem or a situation where you have a child that does not understand anything about authority. And obviously, we see there's a lot of authority today in schools. In some cases, maybe it's overdone when you read about or hear about kids that are expelled from school. What was the one yesterday? Because this little boy pointed his finger like it was a gun at another kid, and they expelled him. And about a week back, wasn't it, where it's a kid in his front yard of his own house playing with some sort of a gun. It was a little play gun is what it was. And a neighbor called the authorities, and when the school district or the particular school, whichever it was, heard about the complaint, they expelled that child for the rest of the year, which I've questioned in my mind, do they have that such authority? It was on the news. I saw it on Fox News, and others, I'm sure, covered it or carried it as well. I don't know what the outcome, if that's changed or not, but some of the things, yes, there's authority anytime a person steps outside of their home, you might say, into this world that we live in, there is. One of the things that children are going to learn if they want to start off in Little League Baseball or Little League Soccer or whatever it might be, you follow the rules that the coach gives if you want to stay on the team. You can't go running off and doing your own thing. If you want to, well, then you can't play here with us. So there are rules and things. Authority is a part of life. And yet you see a lot of times parents do not really teach or show that there is authority as it should be in the home. We find this certainly when you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and in verse 3, 1 Corinthians 11 and in verse 3, where Paul said, "But I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." And as he says, so there is, yes, we see there is kind of a line here. Now, I know it's been overdone, and a lot of times people have come to resent authority. But I said loving authority, where people and children come to appreciate it because it gives them boundaries, and they like to know what those boundaries are. And children who do not have any authority in their life, that is, can do and get away with about anything, and it is not to their good, but to their detriment. Authority in the home of a loving mother and father who support one another gives the child a solid structure to develop within. It is very important indeed. All right, let's look at some loving authority by going to Galatians chapter 5, if you will. In Galatians 5, we have the fruits of God's Spirit. I don't know if you've thought about it this way or not, but Have you ever considered that the nine fruits that were listed there, and there's others too, by the way, throughout the Bible, but these are all in one chapter and in two verses. In Galatians chapter 5 and in verse 22 and 23, but the fruit of the Spirit is love. Now, all of these that follow are aspects and parts of love. And I said loving authority. Love, joy, there ought to be joy. Peace, is it peaceful authority or is it dictatorial? Is it just absolute demanding and overbearing authority? That's not what he's talking about. Long-suffering. Is there patience in this? It takes time and patience, obviously, to teach and help them to understand a little bit about authority. It doesn't just happen at the snap of the fingers. How about kindness? Is there kindness in this authority? Is there goodness in this authority? Faithfulness, certainly faith in God. Gentleness, verse 23, and self-control, most important, self-control. And all of that is summarized by love, isn't it? All of it by love. Against such, there is no law. Now, that's the kind of authority that we would like to have as an employee from our employer, right? But human beings, of course, you know, they have things in their mind that they don't think of all these things. We have to learn how to accept the fact that they're imperfect. But wouldn't we love to have that kind of authority, gentleness, and kindness, and not just, you know, somebody who is making demands and a harsh voice type thing? Yet if you look back, before we get to that, the fruits of the flesh there, that he talks about, verse 20 and 21. Now, let's do a look at this as a contrast. Idolatry, well, I don't know that that's going to, or sorcery, I don't know that that, I don't think will play so much of a problem here. Well, what about hatred? There can be hatred in authority. Contentions, can there be contentions in authority? Yeah, there can be. How about jealousies? Yeah. Are all of those positive? Is that loving authority? Well, no, it isn't. Outbursts of wrath in authority? Yes, that can be, and does. Selfish ambitions, dissensions. I don't think heresies would maybe apply necessarily here. How about verse 21? Envy, yes. Even murder. Just all you have to do is a sad thing to either read the paper or watch the news. How many murders take place in the home and fighting over who knows what. But you look at these things, verse 20 and 21. This does not constitute loving authority, but verse 22 and 23 really does. And that's how we certainly want to be treated, and we want to certainly treat and teach our children as they come along and as they grow and develop in these things with loving authority. Now, these attributes here that I just covered, verse 20 and 21, which are commonly called the fruits of the flesh, these attributes, they push out love, don't they? And it results in a loss of respect and a lack of willingness to obey those who are in authority. You know, when you look at people and young people who are in trouble and who are arrested, and, of course, I've been to recently to prisons, and I'm amazed when I visit some of these people, and had a Bible study over at Charlotte and, Correctional Institute here the last couple months, and, you know, how did they get there? They do have authority in those prisons, let me tell you, and if you violate those rules, they have a way of making you wish you hadn't. And it's not by beating you with a rod or anything else. They have a place of isolation. It's almost like the teacher who has to handle this little kid in the first grade that's just clear out of control, stand in the corner. Have to spend a lot of time with this little child while the other 20 over here are not receiving much of any. And so, yes, you will find it there. It's an unfortunate thing. But when you look at the individuals who got there, and we have over 2 million, by the way, in our prisons in the United States, who lack respect, or a willingness to obey those in authority. And a lot of it is an authority issue because of abuse of authority or whatever has gone on as they were growing up. In 1 John chapter 4, let's take a look at 1 John 4. With loving authority, you don't have to go around to tell everybody or to tell your children, I am in charge. And I don't want you to forget it. And I'm going to remind you every day who's in charge here. You don't have to do that. You know, we were at the feast. And Jim Franks was up there for the first half. Doug Horchak, my immediate boss, was over for atonement in West Palm Beach. We went over after atonement in Fort Myers to have dinner with them and everything. I mean, I understand. Nobody has to tell me. We have a very good relationship, very friendly, very warm, and that's the way it should be. That's the way it has to be, parents to children, and so that they in no way feel any fear whatsoever, but feel very comfortable. But they know, Mommy and Daddy, they're in charge. Now, do they directly, well, maybe as they get older they would, but when they're just little children, preschoolers, do they actually think that out, think through that? But because they've received such loving kindness and authority there in that way, and authority with their parents, it just comes naturally. They know it and they understand it. A couple scriptures here, and I'm going to move on to another principle. 1 John chapter 4, if I get to it, I got the wrong one here, 1 John 4. And verse 7 and 8. And verse 7, Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. And yes, when we have to establish the authority, we don't abuse the authority. We pray and we certainly ask for God's help that we will certainly exercise it in love, in love. And that love has to be between parents, too, as well as between parents and children. Absolutely essential. And children certainly can read something going on that is not as it should be. I'll say this. If things in any way have gotten out of hand in your home, love in time will heal the wounds. It really will. And as long as you begin to change, it's amazing how things can, in time, be healed. One other one I'd like to look at and see why it resulted in the way it did, and that's Genesis 18. Genesis 18, a story here of Abraham, and of course, son was Isaac in this case. He had another son, of course, but this is the one we want to look at. Genesis 18. And verse 18 and 19. Verse 18, Since Abraham shall surely become a great and a mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. Now, that's the King James here in verse 19, where it says, in order that he may command his children. That implies to us from the King James and New King James translation that it was something where he, I demand that you do this, and that it was really just continually put into, in this case, Isaac's mind. But I like, actually, the New International Version on this same verse, which I think really sets the tone of what Abraham did. It goes like this, For I have chosen him so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord. Not that he just came right down and was right on top of them, I command you and I'm watching over you, and if you deviate, I'll be there to stop. You know, the implication is that the way it was in the New King James, and he absolutely commanded and demanded. He had 318 servants, and they made sure that his kids stayed in line, right? No, by what he taught, he directed his children. And it was because of his loving authority, obviously, that he had, that he was able to do this. I mean, you take your son of promise, and you walk 3 days to sacrifice him, and he willingly goes along, and we know that he was around 30 years of age. He's not a little boy. He's a grown man. And he had obviously a great deal of respect for his father. And that came not because of hard-handedness. That came because of loving authority as one thing, not the only thing, but that's what I'm talking about right at the moment. And certainly there was, and we see, can read between the lines, that loving authority that was in that home, and certainly from Abraham as well as Sarah. Sarah was obviously very important to Isaac when she died. You can read the rest of the story. She was a very loving mother to him. And he missed her greatly when she passed away. Let's move on to another principle. Yes, loving authority is very important. What else? Now, a second principle is instruction or teaching our children. That requires time. That's a very important part of life. Every one of us have had to be taught everything from the time that we could be taught, you might say, all the way up. We're continuing to learn, and teaching is a very, very important aspect, and it's a very important principle for successful child rearing. We have to spend time with our children to teach them important lessons and truths of life. That is very important. Let's take a look at what we find in the Proverbs here. Proverbs chapter 2. In Proverbs 2, it's interesting how Solomon wrote these. He wrote them to his son. In Proverbs 2, in verse 1 and 2, "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding," I'll stop there. "If you will listen to me, son." And I obviously, he must have been pretty kind. There must have been already loving authority there that he was willing to listen. Look at chapter 3, verse 1 and 2. "My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. And for length of days and long life and peace, they will add to you." He's instructing. This is written as an instruction from father to his son. And as his son is old enough to understand these things, of course. And this can be taught from a young age, preschool on. And we just try to adapt it to their age level. And also chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. "Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law." Son, please listen to me. And winning on a father to a son and talking with him, kind of almost like heart to heart to his son, to instruct and teach him in many things in life. You know, there are many things we have to teach our children. They're not going to learn in school. There's a lot of things in school they probably don't, we hope they don't learn, as well as maybe some things that certainly that they should learn. You know, it's interesting when you look at this, there are one of the best and most effective ways to teach, especially as children are young, is by reading stories or telling true stories to them. And there are many things concerning the Bible. You can find the Bible written as stories at a Christian bookstore. I mean, it's paraphrased over and written as a story. And there are a lot of wonderful stories from the Bible. You can find it at the Christian book distributors, if you are familiar with them, or Amazon.com, you can go on. And there are other sources as well. We live in a time when there's some wonderful things that are out there that we can use and benefit from, and being able to read stories to our children. You know, one of the things I don't remember a lot about the first grade, but I do remember one thing. I grew up in Oregon. In the first grade, my teacher, after lunch, see, we all had to take a nap, but before the nap, she read a story. And the story, it was a continual story. She would read a chapter every day, and then we had to lay down. Of course, I and the other fellows were faking it. We never did one. We weren't going to go to sleep. We don't take naps on this blanket down here on the floor and all of that. So I don't think I ever did take a nap. But we laid there anyhow. And then finally, 2 o'clock comes, time to get up. All right. But I always remember that story. The story was about two kids, orphaned, who were living in a, maybe some of you have heard the story, I don't know, they were living in a boxcar. And you remember that? You had the same story? Yeah, I remember. Okay. And, you know, it was interesting, just reading there, she had our attention had our attention in reading that story. I always look forward. I don't remember anything about the morning classes, just wanted to hear the story every day and get to the next chapter. And I think that thing went along and must have been most of the school year. And that was kind of the highlight of the day, and I always remember that. I bring it up because we all like stories. I think it was Jim Franks, you know, there at the feast, in his sermon, talked about the Holy Days, the greatest story that's never been told, and how true it is when you see what the meaning and what they picture and the future that it has for all of us and for all of mankind. So we like stories, and that's a good thing. Mothers, you're at home with children before they go to school, in a lot of cases, unless some of you have to work, and as a result, your children are a lot of times watched by family or others, whatever it might be. But when you're home, you may be tired, but take some time to sit down, read a story. You don't have to go for an hour. You can just take a short time, 30 minutes or less, and read a story, a paraphrased story of the patriarchs, of Abraham, starting there and coming forward, of Christ, of his ministry, that has been rewritten from the Gospels, but rewritten into story form. And didn't Jesus tell stories? They're called parables. And they were to teach lessons. And did the disciples listen? They certainly did. And they had many questions afterwards, as they were fascinated by the stories. Sometimes they understood them, and sometimes they didn't. And so they had asked Jesus to tell us what it means. So stories are a very important way. We are, yes, to teach. One of these important things in life in helping to rear children is teaching them, instructing them. And one of the best ways is by stories. And start with the Word of God. Start with the Word of God. It doesn't have to just be that alone, but that should be one of the first ones that you would want to read to them and tell them. As I mentioned already, the Bible is the greatest storybook that has ever been written. It really is. We find this over in instruction in the book of Deuteronomy to read and to teach our children. Deuteronomy, several places here that Moses was inspired. In Deuteronomy chapter 4 and in verse 9, only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and your grandchildren. So grandparents, opportunity. It doesn't just have to be your own son or daughter reading a story to them, but grandparents, when they're over at your home or whatever, you might want to read them a story. Yes, that we teach not just our children, but also our grandchildren. In chapter 6 and verse 7, he repeats it. And in chapter 11 and verse 19, again, repeats it. So three places there in the book of Deuteronomy. But the one I chose here was chapter 4, verse 9, because that's the only one where he says, not just your children, but you teach your grandchildren. And opportunity here for grandparents to be able to, when they have some time with the children, read them a story. Maybe read them a story from the Bible. And it is some of the greatest stories. You know, some of the greatest movies that have been made in the past were from the Bible. The Ten Commandments, every year before Easter, they have to repeat the Ten Commandments. Charlton Heston's been dead now for years as Moses, and Yul Brynner as Pharaoh. And I watched it when it first came out back in, 1960, I believe it was. And I've seen it, my wife and I both have seen it many times since. Other movies have been taken from the Bible. I remember that used to be a topic in the 50s and into the early 60s. The Bible was used for movie topics. You had Samson and Delilah. I remember I saw that movie. I think it came out. I can picture the person who played Samson, but I can't remember his name. And I think that was probably 1958, somewhere back there. What's that? Victor Mature. You all saw it. And there are others, too. I can't think of all of them at the top, off of the top of my head, but many about Christ. Many different movies about Christ and the crucifixion, resurrection, and so on. Coming back, let me just pick up my notes and move ahead here just a little bit. Teach and encourage our children to become good or talented at something as well. A lot of times that maybe is not always looked at, but we have to discover what our talents might be. And it doesn't just automatically come out. We have to do a little bit to see if we can help them to discover it. Why are those things important? Well, it helps to build confidence and self-esteem in our children if they begin to see that they can do something. They begin maybe to take piano lessons, and they begin to realize, hey, that's neat. I can really do that. And they said, you're doing a great job. I'd love to hear that, right? Encouragement. And what's that commercial? The kid up there at the on the stage, where's Tommy? Well, I thought he was with you. You've seen that one? And he's out there on the stage, and the curtain opens up. He's up there playing the piano, and here comes out the artist who is going to perform. And he says, that's okay, let me help you. And at the end of it, it says what? Encouragement. How's the rest of that phrase go? None of you have seen it? You have. Okay, Cindy. All right. It's a great commercial if you get a chance to see it sometime here. Encouragement. Don't let it something or other. How's the rest of it go? Yeah, right. And, children need physical challenges, as do parents in life as well. Other examples, I mentioned music, instruments, choir, games and sports. They're very good. They can be very good for people to learn different things in life and lessons in life, as well as have fun. How about art, painting, sculpturing? Those things challenge the mind, don't they? And especially when you begin to see you're getting kind of good at it. A lot of times they start off with little notebooks that have numbers in them so you can know what to paint and everything. But you then, if you really get onto it, begin to advance. You want to do a little bit more and begin to see things that a lot of people do not see or look at when it comes to actually painting something. You know, some of the greatest sculptors, if you ever go to the Middle East, look at the Roman sculpturing that you find at Caesarea in Israel, you find in Italy. And who were those people? Well, God only knows. We have no idea. Their name is not around, but they are some of the greatest sculptors, I think, who have ever lived. Some of the statues we saw, and then unfortunately, the Arabs knocked their heads off because of their superstition that they didn't think an image of a person's face or head should be there, so they'd knock the head off, and here you got the rest of the body with the robes that they wore and everything. It's beautifully done. And all out of one piece of marble. Whoever they were, they were great in their time and in their age. Teach them as they become older how to compete in the right sense. They have to learn how to win. They have to learn how to lose. Victory versus defeat. Because that's going to happen in life. And a lot of times some people at first have a hard time with that. Teach them how to work by doing little things, rewarding them for doing a good job. We have to teach children how to work and start with small things. Maybe it's with their room. Maybe it's, they might vacuum the house or whatever for you. You give them something for doing it, not only because they did it and finished it, but you did it. It was a good job. You're teaching things. You're putting values there in their mind that will carry over when they have to begin to start looking for work. As they get older, teach them to set goals in life. What would they like to do in life? Encourage them to read an interesting book, to learn new things, instead of watching TV and playing games on the computer. How about reading a book and stimulating your mind, your thinking? These are things that we want to encourage them to do. As they learn to read in elementary years in school, hey, get books on that level that they, outside of class, will like to read. They get interested in reading. Encourage them to see that school and higher education is good and develops the mind and the intellect. To be positive about it. A lot of kids go to school because, well, I have to. It should be more than that. It'd be something that is to help us to learn and to help us to move forward in other ways. Teach them to choose their friends wisely. Teach them to choose their friends wisely. When you have time with them, you want to teach them. And you realize in a lot of cases, if they're in a situation where they may be getting around the wrong people, you want to sit down and talk to them. In Proverbs 13, you know, the principles are broad, but they are also easy to remember. And you can take this one, and there's almost no end to where you can take it. But in Proverbs 13 and in verse 20, and this is so true today, Proverbs 13 and in verse 20, where is it here? He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. How true can, when we look around, I look at some of the young people that have gotten in trouble, and you look at, well, who did you run around with? Duh. It's not hard to figure out, is it? And it's so simple. It's common sense. And these are things that we have to teach. And, you know, who are your girlfriends? Who are your boyfriends that the girls running around with? Not that they're boyfriends, by I mean, but the girls running around. Who are your girlfriends, girls? Who are your boyfriends, boys? Who are you running around with? And those things are important. And, look at the, out in Los Angeles, we can go to about any city, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Miami, and you look into the inner cities. By the way, I saw something here about Miami this week. It was on, what was the Discovery Channel or whatever it was. I forgot which one it was. I didn't know this about the history of this city. After the Mario boatload came over here from Cuba, and how that the drug industry then really took off in Miami, and it became the center for the cartels here in the 80s, and how that they were able to, it took a long time to get on top of it, and the bodies that were in the streets and the bodies everywhere of those who, I guess, weren't cooperating, or there was fighting between the different gangs. And unfortunately, we see a lot of this everywhere. You see it in Chicago going on. It's making the news and everything because, you know, one weekend, 37 killed. You got a turf war going on. Now, if you happen to live in that neighborhood and your little Johnny is growing up and is in the fourth grade, might you be a little concerned who his friends might be as he's growing up and who his friends' brothers are that are older than him? Absolutely. That's why it's important, because we do not want them to in any way get into a situation that really can lead to some destruction in life. So, yes, teach them to choose their friends wisely. It's very important, especially in these times that we live in. Let's move on. Second one I gave here was just repeating again. Principle is instruction or teaching. We are always teaching. And we certainly, it's loving teaching, isn't it? Outgoing concern for them. A third principle of successful child rearing is loving discipline. Loving discipline. We find here in Proverbs 13 and in verse 24, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Well, the Bible says there is a time when a spanking is called for. Is it a steel rod, like wrought iron that they put in cement? No. Obviously, it was probably something of a switch type thing here, but the word rod was used in the King James. Is it beat him up, really, really, really whip him good? No, that's not what it's talking about. It should not be all negative, but it should be purposeful. It should not be defeatist or out of revenge either. It need not always be a spanking. It may be losing of privileges. It depends on the age, on the offense, the personality of the child. Some children are strong-willed. Others are very compliant. It depends a lot of that. If you have enough children, you're going to get a strong-willed one in there somewhere. And, you know, it's going to be a real challenge. We know. But I want you to also notice, in contrast to this, Proverbs 19 and in verse 18. Proverbs 19, 18. Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. Do not set your heart on his destruction. In the center margin says, literally, to put him to death, a Jewish tradition, on his crying. And it's very interesting that Solomon was inspired here, the second half of verse 8, do not set your heart on his destruction. Now, what does that tell us? We have to use quite a lot of discretion. You know, the thing that is taught today, and I guess it began with Dr. Spock after World War II in his 1947 book and has continued on down to the present, that you should never spank your child. You should never lay a hand. That is hitting, that is beating, and that that should never be something that you would do. Well, you can beat, but that's not what the Bible teaches. And it's talking about loving discipline. Let's put it another way. If a child grows up with zero discipline, what do you think you're going to have? Zero discipline. Never has been disciplined for anything. You're going to have some, he's going to have, or she's going to have some very, very serious problems as life goes on, because they have never, though they've never been stopped. They've gotten away with anything they would do. And now there are different ways, by the way, of discipline here, as I mentioned just a moment ago. A lot of it has to depend on the situation, of course. But you do not beat a little child. There is a time when they probably do need to have a SWAT or two to get their attention. That is not what they are to be involved in and to be doing. You want to build them, as it's really showing here in the last part of verse 18, build them with encouragement. It is to motivate them to do good. It is purposeful when it has to be done. Now, the cycle of discipline is this. Instruction, all right, this is this because of what you are, have been doing here, this is what I'm going to have to do, followed by correction, and it can be more than one type, and then followed by love, love afterwards. That is the cycle of discipline. Some say, well, I will never, as I mentioned, spank my child. That is just hitting him. Here we go, in the back room here. Okay. But let me ask you this. When you hear that, and I've heard it, do you really love your child? Do you? Does God spank us if we turn away and do evil in some manner or way, using the word spank as a figure of speech? Yeah, the Bible's full of that, isn't it? Examples. But on the other hand, you have over here in Colossians 3, we temper things. Look over here at Colossians chapter 3. Paul spoke of this. And Colossians 3:21. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. Over-discipline or over-spanking certainly provokes, and it does not succeed with any purpose of teaching and motivating that child to do what is right. So do not over-discipline. Now, what are examples that would call for some kind of discipline? What examples can you think of? I don't think you'll disagree with me on these. Number one, how about defiance? Defiance. Can a parent just allow defiance to go on? How about an uncontrolled temper tantrum? Now, probably most of you here have been in a grocery store where a mother has a child in the cart with an uncontrolled temper tantrum because he can't get what he wants off the shelf, so he reaches over and throws the cans on the floor. Now, Johnny, that's inappropriate conduct. We can't have that here. It's very embarrassing, it's very difficult, and it is not helping little Johnny, is it? There's a time when little Johnny may have to be taken out to the car or back home and sit down and have a little cycle of discipline from instruction to correction to love. But a lot of times, nothing is done. Oh, he will grow out of it. And, well, in time, I would hope that he would. What will he be like when he does? We need to ask ourselves, you know, in AA, I think, is the ones that coined it to begin with, and I've heard it from other organizations since then, is tough love. I use that term. I believe God practices tough love, too. Well, I know he does. And he is going to before his son returns to this earth. It's called the Day of the Lord. There is a time in control that, and with purpose, that we do have to discipline, practice what we would consider in this case tough love. Tough love. You know, it's like times later when a teenager gets to the point that they can no longer, well, they're destroying the whole home because of their activity. Maybe they're even out of high school or they've dropped out or whatever, and they're causing so. It can get to the point where finally tough love says, you can't stay here. We can't have you here. You're going to have to leave for your good and for the good of the home until there is a change of attitude. And that certainly has happened a lot of times as well. You hope it never comes to that, but those, you can see that those are type of things that can happen. And what else would you consider some discipline over? Deliberate disobedience. Deliberate, not accidental, but deliberate. Stubbornness. How about, as maybe later in life, lying, stealing, fighting, swearing? Maybe you can think of some other things. But that, it would require some kind of discipline. And by they get to them, when they get to that age, usually up, it's going to be disciplined by some other means. And certainly removing privileges. They use grounding. Sometimes that may not be enough. But yes, some forms of discipline are necessary. There are books, by the way, out there that I think would be very helpful if you're wondering yourself. Kevin Lehman's books on the birth order is very good to understand the different children of the, whether the first, second, third born in that order. He has updated much of his work, and his is quite good. Dobson's book on the strong-willed child is quite good as well. There's a number of others that are people who are what you might call Christian psychologists who they do believe in what the scriptures say, and they apply them in a practical and way to help parents today. A lot of times some people have maybe, again, these words, authority and discipline, people look at it as the overuse or the misuse. No, there is a loving way, a correct way, and so the children can be able to grow and to mature, and that you can begin to see their growth as well. Now, the fourth point of a principle, which I would consider even the most important here for successful child-rearing, is faith. Faith. We must pray for help and wisdom to be successful. We see principles that are in the Bible, whether it's a loving authority or loving discipline, loving teaching. But we need God's guidance and help to be able to understand how to apply it in our home and with our children. And we do need to pray and ask for this help. We may need to fast and pray about it, that God will help us to see and understand. We need God's guidance for our children as well as for us as parents. It's very important. Pray for your children. pray for their growth. Pray for their development. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 1 Corinthians 7 is a statement made. Actually, it's talking about marriage. But Paul injected this statement in chapter 7, verse 14 of 1 Corinthians. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but now they are holy. They are now holy. God's Spirit in our homes, if one parent is a believer, that is what he is saying. If one parent is a believer and has the Spirit of God, that makes our children holy in God's eyes. It makes our children holy in God's eyes. So our children are holy. These two that we just blessed here today, they are holy. That's what the Bible says. And because of the Spirit of God that dwells there. So it's very important then that we look at these things in terms of we do not try to just do it all on our own. And because parents can be very, you get agitated, frustrated, and you overreact. Very simple to do. We need prayer and God's help to have self-control, to handle situations that just happen out of the blue, you might say, and to have the control to do it. And we need God's Spirit working in us every day and not rely just on ourselves. So finally, brethren, if we practice loving authority, loving instruction, loving discipline, and faith in God, we will be successful in rearing our children.